The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Doers, mowing season is here. With Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, you can get gas-like power with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower for just $329. With a runtime of nearly an hour, it's the perfect mower to tackle your half-acre lawn without a trip to the gas station. Just push and mow. Your grass won't wait, so buy it online and pick it up in-store to get out there sooner. Get gas-like power this spring with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower, just $329, during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Welcome to A Good Football Show. My name is Pat Corain, and I am joined today by Travis May of RotoViz, host of a College to Camp podcast. He also does college football stats and weekly columns for The Solid Verbal. Travis, how's it going?
Great, Pat. It's good to be on and talking rookies. I think this is the fourth show, not even including my own. I'm coming on to talk rookies this week. So this is it's the prime time. You know, the NFL Combine is right around the corner, and NFL draft is going to be here before we even know it. So fun time of year.
Yeah. You're a popular guy this time of year. I imagine, you are a Devy mind, a dynasty mind. You've been tracking these college prospects for years now. And I wanted to get you on to get the needed context on this class and you kind of give us an overview of this class. I want to go position by position and get some thoughts on basically the top of each position group. But before we get into that, any thoughts just kind of on the class as a whole, like where it's weak, where it's strong, you know, how, like, is this the type of class overall where you're looking to accumulate more rookie picks, sell your rookie picks, just kind of general thoughts on this rookie class?
Sure. I think with Devy fantasy football, where you can, you know, roster college players years before they're even in the pros, that's really become my specialty. That's where I kind of live. I love that space. Just to kind of nerd out and try to project and predict the future. I mean, it's a challenge. And even the best at Devy are not great because so many things change in these players. Like Kenny Pickett. So it's just, there's so many things that are almost impossible to predict. But that's what makes it fun. But this year, I think we've known for a while that quarterbacks weren't going to be in the elite echelon, I guess, like they were, at least if we compare it to last year's group. The profiles of, you know, the likes of Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields and Zach Wilson, even the late emergence of Mac Jones, and even Trey Lance, even though he was a huge question mark, we all believed that he was the real deal. And of course, he had that 28-0 touchdown interception season that everyone, you know, was drooling over. But we knew that this group, by comparison, might not have the same ceiling projection. But I think we all saw the number of quarterbacks in this class that could be good enough to start. And I think that's what the numbers would tell us. I think that's what the film analysts would tell you, that there are probably a half dozen or more guys that could end up in a starting spot in the NFL one day in this class. But maybe there's only one, maybe two, that project well as high level NFL starters. So that may not sound super sexy, but the idea that we might get a half dozen guys that end up starting somewhere from this class or from any class at the quarterback position is intriguing to me. So that particular class, as I really have gotten, I guess, better at the whole analytical side of the quarterback position, that's the most fun this year, because the wide receivers in this class, they're probably like 10 deep, and there's that are actually probably day two, like good NFL draft picks that are probably going to start somewhere. But we've kind of known that there were some good players in that group. Running back, not as deep this year. Like there's a solid three options, and then it kind of drops off. And then you kind of have this whole my guy conversation. A tight end, there's not a Kyle Pitts, but there are a bunch of guys who could be depth tight ends, mm-hmm. and starting tight ends. And even guys that dropped to the early day three range but still start, like Dalton Schultz ended up doing for the Cowboys. But I think that the quarterback and really the whole quarterback conversation this year, more so than ever, there's just so much disagreement, which makes that really fun for me.
Yeah. Okay, so it sounds like maybe in Superflex it's a good year to have a lot of picks, but maybe not the best year to have a ton of early picks. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I think so, because most years we're like, oh yeah, in Superflex leagues, it's clearly this quarterback, that quarterback, and this quarterback. And then after that, maybe we reach for the next running back or wide receiver. But this year we're seeing like Treylon Burks at wide receiver and maybe Breece Hall at running back be valued over, in many cases, the quarterback one in this class. And so wow. In many leagues, I'm not sure where these quarterbacks are going to go. So I would rather take multiple shots at this group than just a definitive, hey, this is obviously the right choice at quarterback in this kind of year.
That makes sense. All right, let's dive into the quarterback class. I was looking over at Grinding the Mocks, which is a very helpful website, try to figure out where guys are actually going to get selected in the NFL draft, which is going to be huge for every position, but obviously huge for the quarterback position. They have Kenny Pickett, number one, Malik Willis, number two, Matt Corral, number three, Sam Howell, number four. I was looking at your Superflex mock draft over on RotoViz. You had Matt Corral, number one among quarterbacks, Malik Willis, QB2, Kenny Pickett, QB3, Sam Howell, QB4. So kind of going into that theme of disagreement about, you know, or just a lack of consensus about who the top quarterback here is. I've heard people talk about Willis a lot. I've heard people talk about Howell. Pickett is the top guy I've heard, but let's start with Corral, who you had as a QB1 in this mock draft. What appeals to you about him, and what kind of fantasy quarterback is he going to be? Is he going to have much rushing capability? Is he going to, we're going to need him to be an elite passer to really pay off?
Yeah, Matt Corral is really fun because in his 2020 season, he had near perfect analytical profile. I mean, the depth of target that he averaged in terms of like his downfield passing and his efficiency downfield, like, was just incredible. Like, he had like a 98th or 99th percentile completion percentage over expected. Like, if you adjust for his depth of target and some schematic variables, like, he was an absolute monster. But the thing was, he had like two really terrible games in 2020. And those two really terrible games were really the reasons that he came back to school, because he threw like five picks and like four picks, and it was really bad. And so he really needed to prove that he was going to make some better decisions against certain coverages, especially when teams just drop seven or eight and be like, hey, beat some zone. And he answered those particular questions this year and cleaned up his decision-making, didn't have as many picks, didn't have those fall apart kind of games. But he also added a ton of value as a rusher. So he maintained a top tier level of efficiency through the air as a passer, showed he improved as a decision maker, and added value as a rusher. Maybe too much, I guess, because he ended up, you know, hurting his ankle in the bowl game. But Matt Corral does everything really well. So I think he's an efficient passer. I think he can make the quick decisions and get the ball out when he needs to, but he can really find that second and third read and a deeper progression downfield and succeed there, but then add value with his legs when he needs to. And I don't think he's going to be, you know, he's not going to be a Lamar Jackson. He's not going to be a Kyler Murray on the ground, but he has enough speed and athleticism that he is just the perfect fit as the modern mold of what NFL quarterbacks look like.
All right, that's exciting. How locked in is his draft position, do you think? Because, you know, for rookie drafts, mostly we're drafting after the NFL draft, not always, but for best ball and, you know, those types of drafts, there's plenty of best ball drafts going on right now. So, you know, is he the type of guy that's, you think, is like definitely going to be a starter? Now, of course, we saw Trey Lance sit, and he was drafted very highly. So, you know, you're not guaranteed anything, but does he have a chance of being like a very late first round pick and maybe sitting a year? Or do you think he's pretty safe to be a starter?
There's several teams that need a new starter this year. Like even the Saints, like they can't probably afford to even bring in or even bring back Jameis Winston maybe. So like situations where it might be ideal for them to sit for a year or learn a little bit more. A bunch of these guys aren't going to be able to. And I think Corral, regardless of where he goes, is good enough to start from week one. You mentioned Trey Lance. I think he's kind of an anomaly within the modern NFL, because more and more we're seeing these first-round quarterbacks. If you are a first-round quarterback, you typically see, you know, on average, like seven or eight starts in your rookie year, maybe even more. Like Patrick Mahomes, again, kind of an outlier, but they already had like a super proven guy there ahead of him that was going to be gone after that 1 year anyway. But I think Corral can plug in and play right away. Lance, I mean, he came from an FCS background, playing against guys who just had no business even playing football in half the case. And then he missed like an entire year outside of one game against Central Arkansas, which wasn't even good. So he needed to kind of get back up to speed and really get back in the role of playing at a, you know, an NFL speed level. So it makes sense to me that he wouldn't have started right away. But somebody like Matt Corral that has so many recent starts against the top level of competition, he's already ready. He was ready over a year ago. He just needed to prove it to up his draft stock, really. And so I don't have many questions with Corral. I think he starts right away and does so in pretty impressive fashion for a rookie.
All right, that's exciting. Malik Willis has been kind of compared to Trey Lance a little bit, at least I've heard, you know, kind of a rusher, maybe a little bit of a project type, but very high ceiling. Is that how you see him?
Yeah, I think people are a little bit too tough on him because of the competition questions. He did play at Liberty. You know, he started his career off at Auburn, and you know, the really nitpicky people are like, well, how could he not beat out Bo Nix when he was at Auburn? But really, that's kind of a different podcast in and of itself. But Bo Nix was a 5-star quarterback, and so it was just a given he was going to be the guy. And Malik Willis saw that was the case, and Bo Nix's daddy was an alumnus, and so he had the upper hand. And so Willis was like, okay, I'm going to get out. I'm going to go find a great opportunity and take advantage of it. And he did that 2 seasons in a row. And from just an analytical perspective, he's not as polished on paper as some of these passers are this year. But even if you, I don't know, are really negative about his interceptions, you can still look through and see a guy who hits incredible downfield passes, throwing to absolutely nobodies every single week, having to absolutely carry, frankly, a terrible team consistently week in, week out. And so Malik Willis, yes, he's pretty raw in terms of, I guess, what he's probably going to be asked to do at the next level. And there are questions because he did throw like 12 picks last year. But he has more tools than anybody else in this class. He's got a 70-yard rocket on his arm, and he can project to be that kind of 800-plus rushing kind of quarterback at the next level, which is a lot of fun, which is why I think the NFL and fantasy football nerds alike are going to, when it's all said and done, be really excited about the upside that Malik Willis brings.
How big do you think landing spot is going to be with him? Because it sounds like, I mean, he's the type of guy, I don't know that much about him, but I'd be certainly nervous if he landed with like an OC I wasn't confident in.
Yeah, I think he is somebody who could be ruined by the wrong kind of situation, because as it has already been seen, even at the collegiate level, if he doesn't have some ideal circumstances around him, he can try to force it and he can get himself into trouble. He can take unnecessary sacks. He can miss some easier passes while also hitting some absurd passes because he's just always trying to make the big home run play. And if he's in a situation where he doesn't have good skill players around him, he doesn't have a good offensive line, he doesn't have a stable coordinator situation where he's having to learn 1, 2, 3 different schemes in the course of his first 3 seasons in the NFL. Yeah, I think that's not ideal for anybody. But for somebody who has not actually had the opportunity to be in a super healthy situation surrounded by good playmakers with NFL speed, I think there's just, there's more unknowns with somebody like Malik Willis coming from somewhere like Liberty, who was asked to do what he was asked to do, which is basically carry the entire offense on every single play. If your first read's not open and your second read's not open, you run. And that's our whole plan. Like, go do it.
Yep. Moving on to Kenny Pickett. You know, I know he's a bit older. He kind of came out of nowhere a little bit. You know, I've heard kind of the age narrative. And yeah. At this point, I basically expect him to be like Brandon Whedon. He's 23 going on 24. He's not like 27. But I don't know. What are your thoughts on him as kind of someone that I don't think my perception is that we weren't really expecting him to have the type of season that he just did. And so kind of what are your thoughts and how much are you willing to buy into this final season?
It is funny because he was basically like, he was like the Andy Dalton of college football. Like he, like before this year, like he was just barely good enough. Like, hey, if he's your starter, you might limp into the playoffs, but you're not going anywhere. Like, just good enough to be a starting quarterback mm-hmm. at the college level. And then all of a sudden, in his fifth season, he shows up and throws over 40 touchdowns, and he's all of a sudden this Heisman candidate. And so that is a little bit concerning. But what we've seen time and time again here recently, especially, is that the NFL doesn't necessarily have to, you know, you don't have to have it all figured out as a quarterback in your first season, your second season, your third season. In fact, they value extra starts for these guys. But they just want you to see, they just want to see you put it all together in your peak year. And if your peak performance is incredible, we can ignore that okay junior year. We can ignore that okay senior year. And then we'll get your super senior campaign and go, okay, that guy's got all the things that we want. He wasn't there early, but he is there now. Like, I mean, Joe Burrow, like after his 2018 season, he would have gone undrafted. And then he shows up the next year and puts together the best performance that we've ever seen in college football from a quarterback in his 2019 season. And he's a first round pick. And I think that's the kind of situation we're in again. Like, if we look at the wrong film, we're going to see a different kind of player who has a much lower ceiling than we saw in his final year. But quarterback metrics and trying to predict the future for quarterbacks, like most positions, we want to see an earlier breakout. And that has more of a statistical impact on their future at the next level. But quarterbacks anymore, age doesn't mean as much as it does at other positions. So I'm not super worried about it, but I am a little bit skeptical. Like, what really happened to make that perfect season finally click in year five?
What type of quarterback is he stylistically?
Honestly, I mentioned Joe Burrow. I think he is that kind of guy who's more of a pocket field general type, but can get outside the pocket and add some value with his legs if he is asked to. But he's not going to ever really look to do that more often than he's really needed to, I guess. So, I mean, like Pitt, the rushing game has been really terrible since Kenny Pickett was there. I don't know, even when he's a freshman, they really haven't had LeSean McCoy in a while at the program. And so he's actually coming around 13, 14, 15% overall, like rushing yard market share, like taking up almost 15% of the rushing yards for Pitt a couple different years, proving that he can carry some of that load. But if you look at his raw stats, you won't see that because you're like, oh, 200, 300 yards, that's not really that impressive. But it is a giant chunk of Pitt's rushing production overall. So analytically speaking, if we compare him to other quarterbacks who've done the same, he's a 90th percentile efficient passer in his peak year, and he's got the near elite levels of rushing yard market share numbers too to indicate he kind of fits the NFL game today, and he kind of looks like a first round pick now. So I believe, but I am probably, until he's in year three, going to be a little skeptical.
Yeah, and he sounds like the type of guy where, like, for best ball purposes, if he's not a first, like, I don't want to be loading up on him and then he's like not a first round pick. Is there any chance he's not a first round pick? Because that's not going to be fun.
No, I think at this point he's one of the safest projections. Yeah, I mean, okay. Like, there's, and just to, it's really like, it's Pickett's pretty safe, Willis is pretty safe, Corral is pretty safe, Howell is like that maybe, but most likely still a first round pick. And then after you get beyond that, it's definitely questionable as to who's going to be going in round one.
Let's talk Howell, because I know he has a bit of rushing to his profile. And it's kind of an interesting situation where, you know, the team he played for, North Carolina, produced two NFL quality running backs in last year's draft. But the receivers that came out of last year's draft in North Carolina, De'Ami Brown, and it, was it Des Fitzpatrick?
Daz Newsome.
Yep. They have not looked that great as NFL players. So, like, the team situation around Howell is interesting. And then, of course, when he loses Michael Carter, then, you know, you're looking at him taking over a ton of the rushing production this past year. So what are your thoughts on Howell?
So Howell is somebody that even when he came into college football back in 2019, like, the joke was he's got a little bit of Baker Mayfield in him. Like, he's that shorter, stockier guy who's fast enough to add some with his legs and could be a really fun deep ball kind of passer. And that's what he was. Like, he was already, to me, like, he was already as good as senior year, like, final season Baker Mayfield was when he was a true freshman. Like, and so when people compare, you're going to hear people compare him to Baker Mayfield all throughout draft season. But he's a better version of that, and he doesn't have as much sassy attitude to him as Mayfield showed out in college. And so, and it is true that he really, outside of this last year, didn't prove himself to add a bunch of rushing, but he was around like 5%, 6% or so of the team's rushing yards. And it was because he didn't have to. Like, he was a really incredible pocket passer, which in his first 2 years alone had almost 70 touchdowns passing on a team that hadn't really been a prolific passing offense before. And so, I mean, like, you've seen a couple of good North Carolina quarterbacks come out, but he just came in and changed the game. Like, we've known for a while that he was one of the most elite passing weapons in college football. And he was imperfect this past year when he had to completely replace every relevant skill position player around him. You mentioned Dyami Brown, Daz Newsome, Javonte Williams, Michael Carter, a couple other ancillary players that were gone. Like, between all of those guys that left, that was like 5,000 yards from scrimmage and 50 touchdowns worth of production that was gone. And all he had to replace them was a really slow, big-bodied guy on the outside who didn't really see any work, completely brand-new wide receiver in Antoine Green that was okay, and then this really speedy slot guy named Josh Downs, who was actually going to be an early-round pick eventually, but he didn't have anything to really help him. And so because of that, he had to take on a huge rushing workload. When players weren't open, he had to scramble. He actually had more rushing yards per game than Malik Willis did this year. Like, he was just scrambling for his life.
Wow.
And so we saw a player that was already an efficient passer, like above the 90th percentile by any way you want to look at it. And then he added the rushing upside of a guy who we thought was way more athletic than him and Malik Willis. And so I love Sam Howell. He projects to me as an early first round pick, but he's not being valued that way. And yet I think he succeeds anywhere that he goes. You plug him in anywhere at all in the NFL, and he's going to have a decent rookie season.
Well, so if he gets selected, let's say in the mid first round of the NFL draft, how far could he jump up in your rankings? Could he be your quarterback one if you like the situation, or do you like Corral too much? Do you like Willis too much? Where are you at kind of if the draft position comes through for him?
It's a really weird class because the landing spot, it could completely flip who I have as my quarterback one. Like, I think the only guys that could be in my quarterback one slot are Sam Howell, Matt Corral, and Malik Willis. I'm never going to have Kenny Pickett as my quarterback one, probably. I'm never going to have Desmond Ridder as my quarterback one. And I'm never going to have negative 20% rushing yard market share Carson Strong as my quarterback one. It's just not going to happen. But I think Sam Howell is that guy who could surprise and end up being the best of the bunch.
Okay. Any thoughts on, it sounds like Strong as a statue doesn't have necessarily the first round draft capital. Ridder, do you think he gets drafted in the first round? And if he does, are you interested?
If there's a fifth quarterback that goes in round one, I think it is Ridder. What he did at Cincinnati was incredible. He carried them to the most successful period in their entire program's history. Like, yes, they had one other really good peak season, maybe I think it was 10 years ago. But like, what he did over his time in Cincinnati was absolutely incredible. He had three seasons above the 80th percentile in pass efficiency, and he had four seasons, I believe, above 14% rushing yard market share or more. Like, he was always a good enough rusher to add some value with his legs. But what we saw in progression year over year is he would just improve one more thing and round out his profile a little bit better. And the one thing that I had questions on was how consistently he was going to be accurate downfield this past year. But he improved in that regard incredibly, became one of the most prolific, even deep passers this year with kind of a gross set of skill position guys. Like, Alec Pierce is your best wide receiver. Like, that's not a good situation. Like, and yet he carried them to the college football playoff and hung with one of the best teams ever in Alabama. And so that matters to me. He didn't look crazy good in the college football playoff, and so people are going to knock him for that. But he's playing with guys who are just half as naturally good as the entirety of the Alabama roster. It's impossible to look good in that situation.
That's kind of exciting. All right, let's move to the running back class. This also seems kind of like a weird running back class where maybe there's not a ton of consensus about the top guy. Grinding the Mocks has Kenneth Walker is the top drafted running back. Isaiah Spiller, number two. Breece Hall, number three. But Breece Hall is the guy that in the work that I've done, just looking at the numbers, he's the guy that's jumped out. You have him running back one in the mock that you published. He seems to be the consensus, like basically any type of fantasy, best ball, ADP, et cetera. Breece Hall's the running back one in this class, but how locked in is his draft capital? Like if this, I don't think is considered a particularly strong running back class. If he's the third running back selected, is that a third round pick? Does he have any chance of falling to the fourth round? I mean, are we getting like a little bit out over our skis with Breece Hall in these best ball drafts?
I think just in terms of how we as a collective community do end up reaching for running backs just in general, especially young running backs, we want the next big thing to hit and we assume it's going to happen. I think we do that more often than not just anyway. But with Breece Hall, I do believe he's going to go inside of round two. I don't think there's going to be a single running back in this class that's taken in the first round. And we might not even see one taken inside the first 40 picks. I think a lot of mock draft data would kind of go to confirm that that might be the case. But I think that it's a lock. He's going to be a day two pick. And I think it's a lock that Kenneth Walker is going to be a day two pick. Okay. And I think it's a lock that Isaiah Spiller is going to be a day two pick. And outside of that, I have no idea. Like it could be just those three, which would be a really, really weak draft class by draft capital standards. But Breece Hall, I think, is the safest bet. When you look at a guy who put back-to-back 1,700 yards from scrimmage seasons up, and he's 6'1", 220 pounds, and can add some value as a pass catcher, yeah, sign me up for that.
Yeah, he's like, I kind of been viewing him like David Montgomery, who also went to the same school, or like a Mark Ingram type. Are those the type of backs that you're thinking about with him?
Yeah, I think so, but I think he's actually more athletic than David Montgomery ever was, and actually was more efficient in a similar situation than David Montgomery was, and really what his peak production looked like in virtually an identical situation. I mean, Hall was more impressive than Montgomery. So I think he's going to test better than we believe. I wouldn't be surprised if Hall actually just didn't run his 40 because he has nothing to gain in doing so. But he's fast enough. Like, I'm not worried. Like, Josh Jacobs, he didn't end up running his 40 either. And he wouldn't have wowed in that regard either. But I think we could be looking at a player like a Jacobs that can add some value in the passing game and can be a touchdown scoring monster because he's already done that way more than Jacobs did, by the way, at Alabama. But Hall just can carry an offense by himself. And that's what we want in fantasy football. We want that opportunity. And Hall's a guy that has proven he can do it consistently year over year.
Okay, and you view him like Josh Jacobs was used this past year in terms of the yes. receiving ability?
Yep, I think we could see somebody like that. And maybe that's not, you know, we want that Najee Harris who's going to come in and immediately be a running back three or four.
Right.
But I don't think we have that player this year. I think we have somebody who could immediately press for friends running back one status. And that's still valuable for sure.
For sure. All right. Isaiah Spiller, you had number two in the mock. And I guess the thing is, I look at him, like, do you expect him to test well? I know he's a competent college receiver and, you know, a productive back. He's elusive, but how do you think he's going to test?
You know, I don't think he's going to, you know, we don't always see a Saquon Barkley in the class. I don't think he's going to, you know, be a sub 4.4 kind of athlete, but I wouldn't be surprised if Spiller actually ran almost exactly a 4.5 flat, which actually for running back is above average. I know we want to see these guys be in the 4.4s just everywhere at every position, but it just doesn't happen. Like the actual average for running back 40 times is like between, depending on the sources you use, in between like 4.56 and 4.58 even. So yeah, I think Spiller will be above that average, better, faster than that. But I don't think he's going to be like an 80th percentile kind of athlete for starting running backs. But I don't think that's what makes him so good. I think his vision and his one-cut ability and proven track record against some of the toughest competition in the country, three straight seasons of, 1,100, 1,200 or something yards from scrimmage, 3 years in a row in the SEC, and he improved in terms of, like, how he did against tougher competition every single year, too. So I think I'm not really concerned if he comes in around the 60th or 70th percentile athletic level because he's still going to be a day two pick when it ends, when it's all said and done. So that means opportunity, most likely.
Yeah, and he's also a competent receiver. Do you view him is a similar type of, you know, maybe a Josh Jacobs 2021 style usage, or how do you view him?
Yeah, I think that would be a similar kind of projection as well. which I mean, we always want, like I said, we always want that next level guy, but I just don't think last year was a weak class in terms of the peak ability in the group. And this is an even weaker crew. Like, we don't have a single Najee. We don't have a single ETN. I think we've got a bunch of guys that could look like Javonte Williams, you know, in that vein, could be a good 1A immediately. And that's valuable, especially if their counterpart in the backfield misses time. But I think more than anyone in this class, Hall is a guy I think can feature immediately. Spiller did feature, but even at Texas A&M, he was sharing a significant amount of work with somebody most of the time. Like, Devon Achane last year, like, had just as many yards essentially, and actually was more efficient than him in the same backfield. So I think he comes in and is a really good 1A somewhere, and that might be the best case for Spiller.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. Cause I was going to ask what separates them, but it sounds like the ability to carry the full workload right away is why you prefer Breece Hall.
Yeah. And honestly, like, we assume that, you know, Spiller did that a bunch, but he never had more than 188 carries, which that's not terrible at all. Like, it's just, he never had the crazy, crazy workload that we oftentimes see from, you know, true guys that project as features in the NFL in their college game.
Kenneth Walker's kind of the third guy in the top tier. And I guess my big worry with him is, like, is he going to be involved a lot as a receiver? I know he's elusive, but, like, am I wrong to be worried he might be Zach Moss?
I think he's better than a Zach Moss, but I think that's a good comp in terms of, like, how they play the position from a running perspective. Like, they are very elusive, and he proved to do that even before he was at Michigan State. I mean, I mentioned this quite often over the last few months, but Wake Forest, when he was there, was like, they were barely even in, like, the top 80, maybe top 90 in terms of, like, yards blocked before contact for running backs. And so it was a really terrible situation. And he understood that and was wise to leave that situation. Yet Wake Forest cleaned things up as a passing offense. But, man, he made the right decision, because Michigan State built their entire offense around him. And he had, what, like 30 carries of 15 yards or more for them in this past season. And that comes because he's got that great vision and elusiveness and contact balance that you want to see from an NFL feature back. And yes, he has questions as a receiver, but he played in situations that just don't utilize their running backs in that way. They don't ask them to catch the ball. I think if you look back, I don't really use high school receiving data to influence future decision-making unless it informs, like, the skills that a player might already have. And Kenneth Walker and Jerome Ford, actually, of Cincinnati, those two running backs both had significant receiving experience dating back to high school. Ford was actually a wide receiver before he even switched to running back and went to Alabama and then Cincinnati. Kenneth Walker had, I think, two or three straight seasons of 30-plus receptions even in high school. So, like, he can do it. It's different catching a ball from an NFL passer, you know, than a high school. But he has those ball skills. He's an elite-level athlete. I think he can grow into that kind of role, even if we don't see it in year one.
Okay. That makes me feel a bit better about him. Who do you like outside of those top three? And do you agree it's kind of, that's the, you know, a kind of a cutoff or a tier break after those three running backs?
Yeah, I think that's definitely the tier break. I think that's consensus among fantasy folks and also just the real draft people for the most part. I think it's pretty locked in that it's going to go 1, 2, 3 in some kind of order between those three running backs. I think we also in the fantasy community really like Kyren Williams, and I do too. He held off the highest pedigree running back that Notre Dame had brought in about a decade to hold his job for two straight years ahead of Chris Tyree. And Tyree will be good, but he's super undersized. But Kyren Williams is also undersized, and he's maybe going to come in around 200, if that. I think he probably weighs in lighter than that at the combine. So he's probably going to wow from a speed standpoint, from an agility standpoint. He's going to show off his pass catching ability at the NFL combine. But do we believe that a 195-pound running back is going to be a feature? And I don't think that's the case. But what is redeeming about his profile is his receiving upside and his contributions as even a pass blocker that should earn him some early snaps in the NFL. And so I think Kyren Williams can bring a bunch of PPR upside for fantasy football pretty quickly, even if he doesn't see, you know, 150, 200 carries in year one. And so I really like Kyren Williams quite a bit out of Notre Dame. But running back five, though, I think is where things especially start to go in different directions for people. And I think my running back five is not most people's. And mine is Rashad White, a running back, Arizona State. Now, he is team old RB, very much so. But he took the JUCO route. And so obviously he's going to be a little bit older. You know, Ramondre Stevenson just took that same route this year before. He was kind of an older guy, too. But Rashad White is incredibly elusive. He's got, you know, a great profile as a receiving back. In fact, if any back is better in the nation than Kyren Williams as a receiving back, it's Rashad White. And so Rashad White, he averaged like 11 yards per touch or so in 2020, and then proved to be an over 7 yards per touch guy again with a feature back workload in 2021. And really just a dumpster fire of a situation at Arizona State. They're falling apart at the seams as I'm speaking right now. And so it was a mess of a situation, but he held that role and dominated it. And he gets penalized because their games start at like 9:30 PM on a Thursday. So, but I really like Rashad White. I think he'll surprise people with how he tests at the combine too.
Those are the two guys that have jumped out to me, and I hope they get draft capital, 'cause I think they're both really exciting. I was going to ask on Kyren Williams, we're just going to note he has a 1.52 career yards per out run, which is very good. Rashad White has 2.59 career yards per out run, which is like off the charts good.
I mean, I don't know if there's, I don't have that like historical data, but I'm not sure there's anybody that has 2.59 yards per out run at the running back position. Like that's nuts.
It's kind of in that like Kamara territory. You also had Kenny Gainwell like popping off in yards per out run. And so that's the concern with a guy like Rashad White is that, you know, maybe he's a fifth round pick or something. But if he's a it sounds like he won't be a second round pick, but what if he squeaks into the third round? Do you think he could be, you know, a late third round type?
Oh, man. If he squeaks into the third round, he's going to be this year's Keyshawn Vaughn, except he's actually good.
Oh, yeah. So, all right. Yeah. Okay. That sounds fun.
Yeah. Yeah. He's probably going to pop really, really high in average draft position. You know, if he gets any capital at
all. Yeah, and I'm glad you think he'll test well, because, you know, that's, I think, really key with this type of player, is the NFL is going to want to make sure he's really athletic. And he's also not small, right? He's like 210, 215.
Mm-mm. And he's actually really tall, too. Like, he looks like he should be playing X wide receiver, but he's a running back. Like, and not just X wide receiver, like an X wide receiver from like 2008, you know, like he looks like he could be like a Dez Bryant on the outside, but he's also really good as a runner.
All right.
So he's a lot of fun.
Yeah. All right. I'm excited about him. Kyren Williams. Could he be like a Devin Singletary, a little more explosive Devin Singletary? But believe I just looked him up. He's 203 listed now. You know, can he put on a few pounds and get to that type of back?
I think so. I think he could be in that kind of range. I think if you put him somewhere in between Singletary and Eckler, that could be the ideal kind of projection for him.
Well, I'll take that. Any other running backs that we should talk about before we move on?
I mean, there are some other good ones and kind of super sleeper types. It feels weird, but I'm kind of like fading. Like, I know I've gotten a lot of questions on Brian Robinson out of Alabama because he's got an A on his helmet. I got a lot of questions about James Cook because his brother's in the NFL. And I've gotten a lot of questions about Zamir White because he was a former five-star guy and he went to running back U. But I'm actually not certain that any of those three, Brian Robinson, James Cook, or Zamir White, are actually going to get day two capital. And White, you know, he looked a lot better two ACLs ago. James Cook, he's much smaller and not as fast and not as impressive in any way, shape, or form than his brother, but probably gets a boost because of his brother. Brian Robinson, took him 5 years to do anything. Kudos to him for sticking around. Like, he was actually from Tuscaloosa, so he wanted to play for Alabama for forever, and it's a cool story from that regard. But I think he's more Bo Scarborough than he is Najee Harris. So, yeah.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Okay. All right, let's move to the wide receiver position where the class is actually very exciting. I think this is another at least the way I've been looking at it, seems like there's kind of a clear top three. Unfortunately, maybe there would have been a clear top four if Jameson Williams hadn't torn his ACL. But it seems like the clear top three now is Treylon Burks, Drake London, and Garrett Wilson. Is that how you see it overall?
That's not how, you know, that's not necessarily how I rank it. But yeah, I think that
I don't mean that yeah. order, but those three is the consensus three.
I'm not sure that I have London right there right now, but okay. I think Treylon Burks and Garrett Wilson, for their own unique reasons, both deserve to be in the 1-2 conversation. Like I have Garrett Wilson 1, Treylon Burks 2, tier break. And then there's a big group of guys kind of together that, depending on where they land, I would bet on one or the other.
Interesting. Okay, let's talk about Garrett Wilson then. He's a guy that doesn't necessarily like hit everything we want to see in terms of like the classic RotoViz analytics stuff. Although he's a 3-year player, you know, early declare. He did have a breakout season, you know, pretty productive over the course of his career. Maybe not like the hyper productive as we'll get to with Treylon Burks, but still pretty darn productive. And then the other thing that just seems to just come up every draft class at this point is we got to factor in the teammates. You know, he's playing with Chris Olave. He's a year ahead of him in school, having very strong production with Olave right next to him. And then we also have a sophomore at Ohio State, Jackson Smith in Jigba, who looks like he's going to be an absolute monster once he gets to the NFL. I mean, talk to me about him a little bit, because the thing that's really striking me about Garrett Wilson is, yes, he's not off the charts in the production, but he's pretty darn good. And maybe he's like, you know, kind of the CeeDee Lamb playing with the Marquise Brown, but also maybe the Justin Jefferson playing with a Ja'Marr Chase type of teammate competition thing.
That's a great comparison, like both of those, because Ohio State, what they've begun to do at the wide receiver position is just bring in every single year 4 players in the top 100 overall in the entire country. And they're like, hey, one or two of you guys are going to be first or second round picks. Like that's just going to be the deal. Like, and that's going to be, we're going to see that for the next probably 3 straight years of nonstop first round talent coming out of that position from Ohio State. And Garrett Wilson was the best wide receiver there until Jackson Smith and Jigba took off this last year. And it's funny, both Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave, when asked like who the best wide receiver on the team was, they actually were like, yeah, Jackson Smith and Jigba is the best guy. And so like next year, like he's a top 10 pick. Like JSN, as I call him, could sit out this entire year and he'd be a top 10 pick next year. Like he's that good.
Yeah. That's what
and that's did. Exactly what Chase did. And we saw Justin Jefferson absolutely smash because he was really, really good. And Garrett Wilson is really, really good. We saw a player who came in and initially just slotted in where they needed him. And so he succeeded as a slot wide receiver. They moved him outside. He succeeded out on the outside, learned the entire route tree and blocks well, does everything that I think is going to garner him basically 100% snaps, a rookie, wherever he goes. And, you know, he doesn't have like that crazy hyper production, but he does meet all the thresholds that we like to see. He had over 30% dominator rating in terms of his yards per team pass attempt, which is kind of a newer metric, but much simpler and even stickier and meaningful than dominator. Yards per team pass attempt, he was around 3.2 at his peak. And the average for a drafted NFL wide receiver is like 2.5. So he was way above what we like to see in that regard. And my particular metric that I build out every single year combines dominator, yards per team pass attempt, and touchdowns per team pass attempt to kind of look at, can they take on volume? Can they maintain efficiency in that volume as a receiver? And do they score touchdowns? From those three lenses, he succeeded in every single one and has around a 66th, 67th percentile kind of profile, which to predict NFL draft capital and NFL success, we like to see players come in above the 60th percentile at RotoViz. But really, his profile reminds me of A.J. Brown coming out of Ole Miss. Like he was just good enough analytically to check a lot of boxes, but when you turn on the tape, as it were, you're wowed. And he dominated while sharing targets with a bunch of future NFL playmakers. Like AJ Brown was surrounded by DK Metcalf, Elijah Moore, Van Jefferson, like other guys that ended up getting drafted really highly, and Garrett Wilson. He was surrounded by Chris Olave, Jackson Smith and Jigba, Jameson Williams, who was actually at Ohio State before he went to Alabama. Like Jameson Williams left because Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave and Jackson Smith and Jigba were keeping him on the bench. Like, it's insane. So Wilson, to me, has already beaten out a stable of future NFL wide receiver ones and twos. So I have no questions with him.
Yeah, it does. You know, even like the LSU Odell Beckham, Jarvis Landry, days that I think those talented teammates, and obviously we've had the Alabama guys, and we've had to really parse those guys because they're all playing together. I think that really does matter. You also do have, there was the Justin Hunter and Cordarrelle Patterson guys where we thought, you know, they might all be stars and then none of them were. So there's probably like a downside where these players are correlated and maybe somehow they're all bad, but that seems pretty unlikely.
Hey, the thing with Cordarrelle though is he was just at the wrong
position.
Right.
He
should have been a running back from year one. He would have been a smash. He would have been a Hall of Famer.
He already might be for his kick return ability.
Yeah, oh man.
But you know, Garrett Wilson, hyper efficient in yards per route run as well. Not getting a ton of like schemed production. He had a very solid ADOT, 12.3 career ADOT. You mentioned that he was used as a slot receiver in 2020. Then he was on the outside in 2021. The versatility. I mean, it really does seem to be just like kind of a checks all the boxes guy. And also wanted to get your thoughts on his draft position, because it seems like, you know, I've seen the kind of all over the place with these top three guys. Drake London maybe going first. Treylon Burks is currently ranked highest with Grinding the Mocks, but we'll get to him. But I was maybe overly worried that, you know, he wouldn't necessarily get that super high draft position. But Garrett Wilson, I've seen very high. He's number three at Grinding the Mocks. So do you think he's sort of locked into, like, what's the latest you think Garrett Wilson could go in the NFL draft?
I think the latest he'll go is around pick 20, 21, 22, that kind of range.
Okay.
But I honestly think it's safer to assume he's going to be around pick 10 and actually the first wide receiver off the board. If we look back to mock draft data, even dating back to, I don't know, November, and I constantly get updated scrapes just for myself, just to kind of gauge where right now perception is, rather than like the Grinding the Mocks, like all the data in the last whatever several months. And Wilson's just been at the top the earliest, and he stayed up there. He's had the staying power in all the mock drafts more than anybody else has, in terms of like a flavor of the week kind of wide receiver who, hey, this week it's Drake London, he's up at the top, or hey, this week it's so-and-so. But Wilson's been there throughout the process. And once he tests really well, I think he's going to be 0-4-4 is kind of speed. I think he's the first wide receiver taken in the NFL draft.
All right, let's go to Treylon Burks, big wide receiver, 6'3", 225, tons of yards after catch ability, big play ability, but playing primarily out of the slot. You know, some concern when I look at him, like, does he end up in the wrong situation? Can a dumb enough coach ruin this guy? On the other hand, he could be AJ Brown. You know, he's got that kind of like yards after catch ability. And maybe, you know, if he converts, I imagine you see him as an outside wide receiver in the pros and kind of having that deep threat ability plus yards after catch ability in that similar way, in that big frame type of way. AJ Brown also played in the slot in college. So what are your thoughts on Treylon Burks, who is just a hyper producer? And really, I mean, you want to talk about the RotoViz just crushing all of that production metric stuff. I mean, that's Treylon Burks.
Yeah, Treylon Burks from every single angle breaks out and just impresses. Like, if you look at my adjusted production index that I do for RotoViz every year, he's the only Power 5 wide receiver with a profile above the 80th percentile. He's around the 94th or 95th percentile just from looking at his production profile through his receiving dominator, his yards per team pass attempt, touchdowns per team pass attempt. And then you look at things like yards per route run. He's like almost 4 yards per route run in his final season, and yards per target, yards per whatever. And he's just a dominant force anyway that you want to slice it. But yeah, it is weird because he's almost deployed like a modern, like a move tight end almost. Like, he's just this big slot monster who is going to dunk on these little tiny kids trying to cover him in the slot. But then he can also moss you on the outside. If he catches it underneath you, he's going to run around you because he's got some crazy top end speed. I'm not sure that he's going to be as fast as, you know, Arkansas fans might want to tell you he's going to be. Like, oh yeah, he's going to run like the 4.3. He's like, no. But
he doesn't need to, though.
He doesn't need to. Like, his size speed score is going to be just off the charts, even if he breaks 4.5, which I do believe he does. And so, Yeah, he's a big monster freak athlete that I don't even know what to do with, because he's just a slot monster, which is just nuts. Like, you would think he would be more, you know, utilized elsewhere, but I think it has to do how he was used has a lot more to say about the quarterback play at Arkansas and the type of routes that they were going to ask him to win in, because, hey, our quarterback needs to get rid of the ball here. Like, he was heavily used even like in screens like 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And so I think it was more about the quarterback and the limitations there than it was about the upside in Treylon Burks and how he was used there. So I think he can succeed in a whole lot of different roles in the pros, and I think he proved that at Arkansas.
11.7 career ADOT, so not like very, very shallow usage. Hey, it's pretty.
Yeah, but I think that's skewed because a lot of times it's just like most of it comes underneath, mm-hmm. but then the average gets skewed because they're like just YOLO balling it. Like, got hey, it. Treylon, you know, Treylon Burks is down there somewhere. Like, just, you know, like,
right.
Just chuck it.
Okay, that's interesting. If he does break 4.5, do you think, I mean, where do you think he goes in the draft if he breaks 4.5? And what's his kind of bottom in terms of where he might slip to? Could he be like late second, or is that too low?
Oh, man. No, I don't think so. I think he's locked in as a first round pick at this point. We've seen the NFL reach more and more for wide receivers. Like, I think they had, what, 6 wide receivers in the first round a couple years ago. Like, we could see that kind of outcome this year where a bunch of guys sneak into the pick 20 to 32 range. I think if I was going to bet on 2 wide receivers to go earlier than pick 20, it would really only be Garrett Wilson and Treylon Burks.
Yeah. Does he, if he just crushes his workout, could he be the number one wide receiver selected? Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Yeah. If he crushes it and then, you know, runs his 3 cone under 10 seconds, unlike DK Metcalf, then yeah.
All right. Let's go. Combine next week.
Yep.
We talked about Garrett Wilson. Drake London, you mentioned he's not in the top tier for you. I've seen him, you know, mock to go first in this class. He's someone that has a lot of the same sort of questions, I guess, as Burks in terms of his NFL usage. He's a taller wide receiver. He's not as heavy. I've seen him listed at 210,
right?
But he's a kind of a contested catch guy. Love if he was like 225 like Burks, or even 230 or something with that type of profile. Got used even more on screens. Got used in the slot until last year, where he just exploded on the outside, but only played 8 games. So we're dealing with a little bit of kind of the 1 year wonder situation where with London, which we're not dealing with Treylon Burks, who was very productive over his career. And London also had a much lower career ADOT than Burks. He had a 9.7 career ADOT compared to the 11.7 for Burks, which maybe doesn't matter a ton, but it's, I think, definitely highlighting a red flag that we already have, that, you know, maybe he's just getting a lot of schemed production underneath, and the worry that the contested catch production might not translate if he's not big enough to do that at the NFL level. Are you worried about any of this stuff? Because he does look like a very high ceiling prospect if it does translate.
Yeah, so I think you mentioned a few things that would definitely be at least a question mark, maybe not like a concern, but at least just a question in his profile, and that he's you know, the team big wide receiver, like, and the NFL has kind of been moving away from that a little bit more in recent drafts, especially in terms of like the 6'4", 6'5", kind of body type. But what he does really well is he does win in contested situations. And really the whole thing about his average adaptive target, I think I can speak to that a little bit, in that the USC's offensive scheme that we've seen in terms of their personnel distribution, like on a per snap basis, like they were running a bunch of 10 personnel with like 4 wide receivers. And so he was like one of 2 slot guys, but the split was way wide. So he was almost like a wide receiver, like on the outside in the slot. And it's just an odd scheme with a bunch of fast stuff. And like, even in the running game, like they refuse to line up under center. Like, it was like, if it's 4th and a half yard, they're still in pistol. Like, it's just it's a weird situation. And so how they distribute targets and progressions, like the peak hyper production just hasn't been happening a lot at USC here recently, because that's just not what they do. Like, even Amon-Ra St. Brown, when he was still there, like, he didn't have crazy peak production. Part of it was because he was sharing targets with Drake London, but the main thing is just how they build out their scheme and what they do there. And so this final year, Drake London was asked to be basically, hey, we realized we're going to have to change a few things. We don't have the crazy wide receiver depth. You're going to have to be our entire team. And so he was like, he had 120 targets in like 8 games. It was mostly super raw, easy routes to run. It was a lot of go fade, you know, curl, comeback, and then screen. Like, you know, like a bunch of along that vertical plane or just kind of like quick hits, because he can add some value after the catch on screens, because he can just bully smaller corners. And on the go stuff, he can bully smaller corners in contested situations. And I think he can win like that, a la like a Michael Pittman, even in year one. But I will be interested just to see how he refines his game and add some layers to his game, where he's actually more about creating separation than he is just dominating players that he could just destroy athletically in the Pac-12, that he probably won't be able to do, you know, the same thing in the NFL.
You mentioned he's not really in the top tier for you. Is he your wide receiver three?
Honestly, I changed my mind like on the, like that 3-4-5 slot, like this time of year. Like, I'm like, man, because I even though I have it set in one way in like November, I'm like, man, am I really overthinking it though? And I'm really overthinking it when I change it. So he's like, right now he's my three, but like next week he might not be. So
who would be the three that you're replacing him with?
You know, I think Chris Olave, because of what he does as a deep threat. I think I always try to shove him up into that three slot. I mean, when he caught, he caught almost 20 touchdowns on targets over 20 yards downfield in the last 3 years. So his upside in terms of a big play ability, it's almost unparalleled. They kind of tamed down his deeper usage this past year because they just didn't have to. So his ADOT, I believe, was a little bit lower in his final season. His production overall was a little bit lower because, you know, we saw the ascension of Jackson Smith and Jigba and Garrett Wilson. But, you know, people would nitpick him for, you know, having a down final year, being a fourth year guy going into the pros. Like, he would have already been a round two guy last year. And all he did was just kind of solidify all what we already knew about him. And he rounded out his game even further this year. So I think he's a first round pick that sneaks into the 20s and would be somebody that I think could end up being the third best wide receiver in the crew. But there's a few other guys I've thought about having that in that wide receiver three spot too. But Olave, I think right now, would be the guy that could move up ahead.
15.5 career ADOT, 10.8 career yards per target. So you know, no doubt about the type of player he's going to be at the pro level. He strikes me as a guy that we're probably going to like think of as a boring pick, even though he's a good pick in rookie drafts because, you know, you can't talk yourself into a story where, you know, he's kind of a classic like alpha wide receiver, but his profile does look pretty strong. I wanted to ask you about Jameson Williams, who's another deep threat, just hyper productive in this past year, hyper efficient, but, you know, kind of the opposite of the talented teammate story where he has to go somewhere else. I mean, it was Alabama, but he has to go somewhere else to, you know, not have to deal with the target competition at Ohio State. And then he tears his ACL. So where would he have gone for you had he not torn his ACL? Like, would he have been in the top tier?
Yeah, he'd be my wide receiver three. But because I'm just not sure how his draft season's going to go, well, I guess we do, in that it's not going to be existent. He's not going to be able to show off his speed. We're not even really sure when he's going to be back and healthy as a rookie. So I think that just dings his value. I think long term, I think he might be the best bet to be the wide receiver three in the class, given what we saw him do in his crazy, crazy peak season. Like, at one point he was averaging like more than like a full yard per target, more than like anybody on the Alabama roster. Like when Bryce Young targeted him, like good things were going to happen. It was like over, I think it was over 4 yards per route run for a good portion of the season. I'm not sure if he landed there, but it was a silly streak, especially earlier in the year. So Yeah. Jameson Williams has all the upside in the world. You know, just this year one impact might not be what we want it to be.
Gotcha. And then thoughts on, I mean, one thing that made me feel a little bit better about the fact that we're not going to have any testing for him is that he was actually really, really strong on kick returns as well. That final year had 10 kick returns, averaged 35.2 yards per return, scored 2 touchdowns. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't seem like the cut when you compare that, like, he's awesome down the field. He's awesome on kick returns. Mm-hmm. You're not worried about a guy's speed so much when, I mean, assuming he has a full recovery from the ACL tear.
Yeah, I think, I mean, Jalen Waddle, you know, he's probably going to get comp to him, you know, because Jalen Waddle had well, he with him, it was his ankle. He got hurt there at the end, but he was always explosive. He was a crazy return man. He was a crazy fast deep threat that just had a gear that it seemed nobody else on the field had. And that's what Jameson Williams has. So I think he's going to hit in the pros too.
All right. David Bell is a guy I know you like, and he's kind of another classic Rotoviz guy in a few ways. I mean, he's a bigger wide receiver. He's also very productive. 31% career market share of yards, broke out as a sophomore. That was only in six games, and he didn't technically have a junior season breakout because of a lower than ideal touchdown share, but he was quite good in terms of yardage. What are your thoughts on him, and where do you see him being drafted?
Yeah, so David Bell, he's confusing to me because I don't understand why he's not just a consensus, obvious top, you know, wide receiver in the class. I think a lot of people just get to David Bell, they go, oh, a Purdue. Oh, I'm not sure he's a crazy elite athlete. He doesn't have a crazy high, you know, yards per reception. He must not be crazy good. But the truth is, Purdue's offense is incredibly inefficient. They do chuck the ball quite a bit, and they did especially this past season, but they're not efficient. They have terrible quarterback play, and they've had terrible quarterback play for 10 years. And it's really tough to be good in that offense, but we've seen two guys really perform really well. Rondale Moore did with a crazy low average depth of target. There's this underneath monster who was a fun yak, a wide receiver, a slot option for them. But the guy who stayed on the field for them when they went to one wide receiver sets when both Bell and Rondale Moore were there, it was David Bell. David Bell is a monster on the outside, had over 1,000 receiving yards as a true freshman, which is incredibly rare, by the way. Peaked around a 45% dominator. Doesn't come in crazy strong in terms of his yards per team pass attempt marks. But what he did in terms of dominating as a touchdown scorer in 2020 was incredible. And then this past year, in both Purdue's upsets against top five opponents, the dude had over 200 receiving yards. He just took over the game and basically won them two games against two top five opponents. And so in the biggest moments imaginable, he is dominating. Future NFL defenders too, by the way. So I don't think he's going to wow with, 4.3 something speed. He's not going to. But I think he's going to be good enough as an athlete that he does find himself going somewhere in day two. I hope it's early because I think he deserves it. And I think he could be compared to, a Rashad Bateman with kind of slightly lesser capital.
Interesting. Yeah. And in terms of yards per out run, 2.36 career yards per out run, which is actually better than what Drake London has. And he was over a yard per out run better than his teammates, which is also better than Drake London, better career market share than Drake London. So it's the type of thing where if coming into the research, if you told me David Bell was going to be in the first round and Drake London was hopefully a day two pick, I just clearly have David Bell ahead of Drake London. But, the draft position obviously matters a lot. The scouting evaluation matters. So, we have to see where that lands on David Bell, but certainly has he looks to me like the kind of guy we could get very excited about if he's a mid second round pick.
Absolutely. And I mean, before I do this top 100 rookie series for RotoViz every single year, and I start working on finalizing the order around October, and the first run of those generally publishes around Thanksgiving every year for the next year's draft. And at that point, I did have David Bell, I think, even as my wide receiver three ahead of all these guys because of what I thought was his upside. But once I realized, wait, the NFL, NFL people don't like him as this much. What are you doing? Why not? You kind of have to adjust in your projection. I'm not too arrogant to think, oh, I just know better than every NFL decision maker and everyone making NFL draft picks. I would like to be that arrogant, but I'm not. And so I let other people's opinions inform mine. And so I've moved him down a little bit, but I think he has every bit the upside to end up being a top three wide receiver in this class.
Yeah, there's a similar thing, and hopefully it doesn't get this bad, but, Tyler Johnson, it was clear that the analytics guys and basically fantasy guys were going to like Tyler Johnson more than the NFL, and then we ended up liking him a lot more. And, I think we were right to a degree. He stuck around, he did better than his draft selection, but he's now gotten on the field a fair amount, and he doesn't actually look all that good. So, it's kind of one of these things where it's two things. He's going to have a lot to overcome to get the opportunity if he doesn't get the draft position, but also, if he doesn't get the draft position, maybe he's not as good as the numbers suggest.
Yeah, exactly. So we just, you know, you got to adjust to new information. And that's what I've been trying to do with Bell, but every fiber of my being wants to rank him higher than I have him.
Okay. All right. That's good. What about Sky Moore? I'm going to skip down. He's a guy where, like, just looking at the numbers and then, you know, hoping that the draft position comes through. And I always, you know, I have guys like this, and often the draft position doesn't come through. Isaiah Hodgins a couple of years ago was like, oh man, if this guy gets draft position, I'm going to be interested. He didn't get draft position. Seth Williams last year was like, oh man, if the NFL likes this guy, they did not like him at all. And he's immediately buried in, you know, practice squad guy, barely gets called up when there's a million injuries. So you don't want to get too excited about this type of player, even if he has a decent career with late round draft capital. We could be looking at, you know, a Tyler Johnson, at a Rashard Higgins type of guy with a Sky Moore, but I could also see him being like a Jamison Crowder type, you know, even with like a fourth round selection. And then obviously, you know, we did have Stephon Diggs come out of the fifth round. You know, we did have Antonio Brown, I believe, a sixth round pick. So, you know, you do have the guys that are going to get mentioned. But can Sky Moore actually be a day two pick? And what are your thoughts on him as a prospect? Because he looks great in the numbers, but Western Michigan, you know, not exactly a big time program and may not have the draft capital.
Yeah. So we seldom see like a half dozen small school wide receivers that are in the conversation to be day two picks, but that's where we are this year. Like, we've got Sky Moore, like you mentioned, Jalen Tolbert, Romeo Dubs, Calvin Austin, Khalil Shakur, or Christian Watson. Like, there's a bunch of these small school wide receivers that are in the conversation, at least, to go inside of day two. And Sky Moore, I think what the NFL has been addicted to here recently is, one, speed. And I think Sky Moore has plenty of that, but he also just, outside of raw speed, he can really separate and is just wide open most of the time. And even though he projects, I think, perfectly, you mentioned Jamison Crowder, I think that would be a perfect role for him. He projects almost exclusively to be a slot wide receiver at the next level. What I loved about him is he could separate and dominate as an X wide receiver outside the numbers at Western Michigan too. So he wins in a variety of ways out of the slot, as an X wide receiver, as a vertical route runner, as an underneath separator. And then you look at his analytical profile and you're like, oh, wow, the dude had a pretty nice freshman year, kind of burst onto the scene, had over 800 receiving yards, and then peaked crazy high too in his third season. And so when we look at his profile, you're like, oh, my goodness, this small school wide receiver, he might just be a slot guy, but, you know, 44%. You know, peak dominator rating, like 3.8 almost yards per team pass attempt. And in his peak season, like, his production profile looks like a 90th percentile kind of projection at the position. So, yeah, I think he's right there. I think he could be around pick 90-ish. And if that's the case, I think he's going to be reached for in many a fantasy draft.
Yeah, I can tell you a couple that'll be reached for because I'll be in them. 33% career market share, 2.92 career yards per route run, you know, highly productive, highly efficient. The small school thing, you know, adds a little bit of volatility, but I don't think he'll be all that expensive in rookie draft. So I'm pretty excited about him. After him, and maybe including him, really, there's kind of this group of wide receivers that may even include Bell, that's kind of like pick your guys. And it's a big list. It's a really big list. I mean, you mentioned guys like Tolbert, but, you know, you've got George Pickens, who I wanted to get your thoughts on, you know, where he might have been had he not suffered an injury in the spring. There's guys like Justin Ross, who, you know, we were excited about a couple of years ago, didn't really finish his career as strongly as we were hoping. Wandale Robinson, who's kind of a scheme, you know, scheme touches type of guy, maybe a little bit too small. Jahan Dotson, who's pretty interesting, kind of on and on. So if you could just kind of wrap John Mechie, I mean, there's lots of dudes here. So who are your favorite guys in this tier? Who jumps out to you?
Yeah, I really like, you mentioned Jahan Dotson. I think he really proved himself in this final season, but even more so the year before, even though the raw production might not have been as impressive. He was wide receiver one in a kind of trash passing offense. And so it's hard to look at him and separate him from the bad quarterback play, but he was dominant and was good enough analytically and in many, many check mark spots, I guess. And so I think he's getting that first round buzz right now, especially if he gets like top 40-ish capital, which I think he's actually going to end up doing. You'll look at a player who's got an adjusted production index above the 75th percentile. He does separate for himself. He does have some isolated instances of incredible efficiency. I think he's going to test really well here soon and show off some pretty amazing speed. So, yeah, Jahan Dotson, I think, is going to continue rising among fantasy nerds and eventually end up inside the top 40 picks. George Pickens, I do like him a lot. I think he could be right there next to Drake London had he not gotten injured this past year.
Wow.
Because he's also team big wide receiver, crazy, tall, lanky, fast. But he's also in that same mold of basically just go curl screen, you know, like just it's very simple route tree going on with him because that's all he needs to do, because he doesn't have to have a big window for him to absolutely dominate at the point of catch. And he can win vertically over the top and separate facing pretty fast defensive backs. So, yeah, I think George Pickens, he's not back to completely normal yet, coming off of his torn up knee last spring. But it was good that he actually came onto the field late for the national champions in Georgia. And it's in small samples showed, hey, guys, I've still got this. I can get healthy. I can be me again. And so he's, for me, wide receiver 8 right now with the asterisk, just basically saying he could be the wide receiver 1 overall in this class. He's got that kind of ceiling. And so those two, Jahan Dotson and George Pickens, among like that next guy group, like that's I'm really high on them. And then Wandale Robinson, like he was like a running back, and then he was a wide receiver, and then he was a running back, and then he was a wide receiver for Nebraska. And then when he transferred to Kentucky, we thought he would kind of stay in just this gadget role, but he actually was a real wide receiver with a much deeper average depth of target than he had at Nebraska. Not super deep downfield, but he was actually utilized as a normal kind of slot wide receiver who could do a lot and run after catch. And so I think he will test pretty well too. And get pretty decent draft capital and go inside day 2. Mechie, I think, is a good player who's going to get the Alabama bump, but probably doesn't deserve it. And I'm trying to think outside of that. Like, I mean, the small school wide receivers that I'm intrigued by, Jalen Tolbert, South Alabama, first guy in school history to post over 1,000 yards. And even as a, I guess, true sophomore there for them, his raw numbers weren't great, but South Alabama didn't really pass, but 3 straight seasons of 35% dominator or higher at his size,
pretty
stinking good. And so I think for good measure, I think right now grinding the mock status says he should be the first, you know, group of 5 smaller school wide receiver off the board.
I also mentioned on Tolbert that he had a 15.8 career ADOT. So you are looking at a smaller guy. He might weigh in even under 190, but should be. I mean, he's listed at 6'3". I mean, even if he's, you know, over 6 feet and, you know, got downfield ability, hyper productive, it seems like there should be a role for that type of player at the NFL level.
Absolutely. I don't necessarily, you know, a name you're going to hear continually, especially if he tests as well as some people think he will at the combine. Christian Watson, you know, he already got that Senior Bowl bump. North Dakota State, he was kind of like a vertical threat in their heavy play action scheme. So he was just kind of automatically open a lot downfield. And it was kind of hard to tell what kind of player he was going to be. And coming from an FCS level school, but he pretty well dominated the defensive backs at the Senior Bowl. So a lot of people are higher on him. I'm not really there yet because he's kind of 6'4", lanky and bendy, but I'm not sure what he looks like. Like the ideal projection maybe is like a Marquez Valdes-Scantling. You know, like that's cool, but okay, that's also not super useful, you know? Like,
right. What about Justin Ross? Because he seems like the type of guy that probably cost some guys some early Devy picks.
Oh, it did. Yeah, for sure. But he's got a weird situation because he almost like medically retired because he had the thing with the spine and was not even like cleared to play for most of this past offseason. And then all of a sudden he's, I guess it was just basically, okay, we're just going to let him play. He might get himself paralyzed or something, but we're going to let him play. And then he was really inefficient along with the rest of the Clemson offense this past year. And then he ended up hurting his ankle. And so we really didn't see all that greatness that was, you know, right before our eyes when he was like a freshman putting up a 1,000-yard season for Clemson with, you know, with Trevor Lawrence at the helm and T Higgins across the field from him. And it looked great. And he might still hit, but I think he always is going to have this real severe medical situation hanging over his profile, which is a bit concerning. So I can't really rank him that highly.
Yeah, and very concerning for the draft capital. Teams aren't going to want to invest highly if that's the case. All right, let's go rapid fire to the tight end position. Before we do, want to remind the listeners that NBC Sports Edge Plus is giving you an NBA midseason offer. You can get 20% off an Edge Plus annual subscription throughout February when you use promo code STU20. Finish your fantasy regular season strong at one low price. Go to NBCSportsEdge.com/Edge Plus and use promo code STU20 at checkout to save today. I don't think this is a particularly deep tight end class, but there's, and you mentioned there's no Kyle Pitts, but it seems like there are a couple guys who are interesting. I haven't dug into the class too much, so I just kind of want to throw this to you to finish out here. Tell me about the tight end class and who you're interested in.
Yeah, there's no Kyle Pitts. I think that in the end, there's probably going to be one tight end that squeaks into the end of the first round, and that's going to be Trey McBride out of Colorado State. That's the big one that I'm really interested in. Other names, I'll end on him, but Jalen Widermeyer, three straight seasons of impressive in the SEC for Texas A&M. He could be a touchdown scoring tight end with maybe his yardage capped, because I don't think he's an incredible athlete. Outside of that, you've got guys like Charlie Kohler, who's not going to be a crazy athlete, but Iowa State, he proved he could be a blocking tight end, but also a really steady wide receiver there for them. You've got guys like Cole Turner for Nevada. You've got, Greg Dulcich, UCLA. You've got, it's a class full of guys that are good enough receivers and good enough blocking assets that I think they're going to stick on NFL rosters. And most of them are probably going to go in between like the end of round three and early, middle of round five. And so that's not sexy from a draft capital standpoint, but they could all stick out like throughout their rookie contracts. And be viable back end tight end ones popping here and there. And so I'm that's not super sexy when we say it that way, but there's like over a half dozen that I think actually stick and work at the NFL level. And so most classes don't have that kind of depth that can work out, but also lack the ceiling. But the guy who I don't think lacks the ceiling is Trey McBride, Colorado State. So 2 years ago, backup, he had like 100%. He caught all of the receiving touchdowns for Colorado State in a four-game sample. And he was a dominant force as a receiver. And then last year, catches almost 100 balls in one season for over 1,100 yards. And was basically the Travis Kelce of college football. Like he was, like nobody else was even touching what he was doing. Like, and so that's really rare. Even though it was a smaller school, a worse competition level, this guy can make one-handed catches while also being an incredible blocker and doing everything that he's asked to do. He's not going to be a 99th percentile athlete, not even close to that. But I think he's the difference maker in this class that could be a volume receiver, a la like a Zach Ertz kind of guy for a very long time.
Do you view him as like kind of a step above the Cole Kmet, Pat Freiermuth type of guy?
I do, yeah, but I think Pat Freiermuth, the guy that is undervalued because he's not perceived to be an elite tight end, but he drops in your drafts and you get him in just about every single one of your leagues and you're happy with it. That's the kind of situation we could see with Trey McBride, because unless he goes, there's maybe it's over 50% chance he's probably going to miss first round capital, but if he does and he goes like pick 40-ish or something like that, I think his value stays a little bit low and you can get him just about everywhere kind of cheap. If he goes in the first round, I think more people are going to reach for him a little bit. Mm-hmm. But either way, you're getting the best receiving tight end in the class who has the best, most well-rounded skill set in the group. To me, he's the prize of this group, but there's more than a half dozen others that I would be happy to take dart throws in late round three, round four of rookie drafts, the last pick of best ball drafts. Just take a stab at some of those later tight end kind of guys.
All right, Travis, thanks so much. This has been essential listening, and I've learned a ton about the rookie class. I'm sure our listeners have as well. So really appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, glad to be here, Pat. Anytime, but good luck in all your leagues this year.
Yeah, you too. Travis has mentioned his work at RotoViz throughout this. I highly recommend that you check that out. Highly recommend you check out College to Canton podcast. That's going to be just critical listening throughout the entire offseason here. And I know you guys are like diving into like what, the 2027 rookie class at this point already.
Yeah, we've been going through like, you know, a bunch of guys who are going to be in the NFL draft next year and the NFL draft in 2024. Yeah, we love looking at the whole journey of college football prospects from recruit all the way to the, you know, Hall of Fame discussion. So that's where the name came from, College to Canton.
Love it. All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you soon.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.